All right, let's talk about schizophrenia. Schizophrenia is a huge personal tragedy for the people who get it. I guess that's a good way to put it. Short definition. A psychotic disorder characterized by loss of contact with environment, by noticeable deterioration in the level of functioning in everyday life, and by disintegration of personality expressed in disorder of feeling, thought as in delusions, perception as in hallucinations, and behavior. It's been called at different times dementia praecox. I think it's interesting that they credit in the dictionary the word to Latin, because I think the Greeks were there first, with schizo, meaning divided mind, and phreneo, meaning to think. The dictionary definition doesn't really do the disease justice. I guess that's a good way to put it. Or doesn't do the devastation that's schizophrenia justice. But these patients face a life in which everything they do will decline. They don't often work up to full capacity. They don't function well in school. They make up a significant portion of our homeless population. They make up less than 1% of the U.S. population. They account for 20% of Social Security benefits paid. They fill 25% of all hospital days currently. Their life expectancy will be 20% less than the general population. The risk of dying of anything, doesn't matter what it is, just the risk of dying of anything is 2.5 times greater for the schizophrenic than it is for the normal population, sometimes because they simply just don't understand or can't tell you what's wrong with them. You know, if you think that you're Jesus Christ and I'm 007, it really interrupts the doctor-patient interchange. You know, you can't get accurate information from them. Often people think that schizophrenia means a split personality. I think, and it is not, I think that is born out of the observation that these people had a personality before. They develop the problem and they have a personality afterwards that's remarkably different. And it's also not like multiple personalities. You know, sometimes people think that, you know, the multiple personality disorder is like schizophrenia. It's not that either. And it's certainly not like the movie The Beautiful Mind. I can tell you that Russell Crowe was far too clean for it to be accurate. My first encounter with schizophrenia came early in life, at the age of 6. We used to live at the corner of Warman and Ray Street on the west side of Indianapolis. It was a working-class neighborhood in the 1950s. Now, if you went down there at night, you'd want to have 244s on gun belts like this. And you want them on gun belts so they could see them a long ways away and they wouldn't bother you. Not a real good neighborhood. We would drive. Central State was about 3 or 4 blocks down the way from where we lived on Washington Street. And it was at the corner of Washington and Warman and the Washington and Tibbs. And it just so happened that we drove by there a lot because it was on the way to a lot of things that we did. And I can always remember driving by there as a kid and seeing these people standing, staring out behind this tall fence. And I didn't know what they'd done, and I didn't know why they were back there, but I knew I didn't want to be in there with them. You know, that was my first experience with it. About the age of 9, we moved and didn't drive by Central State anymore. And I had really very little or no contact with anybody that was described as mentally ill until I was a junior in medical school. And they rotated me out to psychiatry. And I was at Marion County General Hospital, which is now Wishard, and now it's going to be something else because somebody gave millions and millions of dollars. And I became the doctor for half a ward full of people who mostly were schizophrenic. I mean, that was the way things worked. And I mean, on that ward, I had guys who thought they were Jesus Christ. I had guys who thought they were John the Baptist. Occasionally, they would get together. I can remember that we had a staff psychiatrist who would come in 2 half days a week. I will always remember his name. It was Ramachandran. It took me 30 days to learn it. I don't think I'll ever forget it. And I can remember he would come in and for 4 hours twice a week would staff what we were doing, you know, for the rest of the week, taking care of these people, which, you know, it was kind of frightening in a way. I would ask him what the main treatment at that time was. Thorazine. You know, Thorazine replaced straitjackets. It replaced frontal lobotomies. And actually for people who are schizophrenic, it's a good drug. You know, I know you might not think that, but it is, because it calmed their hallucinations and calmed their delusions. They would come in hallucinating and deluded and in straight jackets, and they'd be put on their medicine, and then they would go out, and 2 weeks later, after they'd quit taking their medicine, they would be back. I can remember asking the psychiatrist, well, how much Thorazine should I be giving these people? And he smiled and said, just keep increasing the dose until they don't tell you they hear the voices anymore. And that was pretty much the state of the art at the time. Central State Hospital is deserted now, except for the Indiana State Medical Association's museum. They have a museum there because a lot of interesting old stuff about medicine there. But the rest of it's empty. Of an interesting note, it had the architecture was Victorian, and it had seven buildings, and they had seven steeples. And my mother would often look at my brother and I and tell us that we were driving her to seven steeples. Yeah, we were driving her crazy. Anyway, and I think it was sort of a colloquialism for the west side of Indianapolis, driving me to seven steeples. Well, anyways, Central State's empty now. I suppose Thorazine had a great deal to do with that. There was real hope that patients who had psychosis and delusions would take the medicine, move out into society, and do well, and not have to be incarcerated, which was what it was. They were held against their will most often in circumstances that we would not want, and nor would we approve today. And it was hoped that they would move back into society and do fine taking their medicine. That was the hope. The reality was delivered to us by the Supreme Court sometime in the 1970s, when the Supreme Court decided that schizophrenics have the same constitutional rights that we do, and that they could not be imprisoned against their will, which is what being, you know, legally placed in a mental hospital is. You're being imprisoned against your will. And they could not be forced to take medicine. And it literally emptied mental hospitals across the country into systems of outpatient clinics. It was believed that the patients would take their medicine, keep their clinic appointments, move back into society, find work, establish normal home lives, and not have to be imprisoned in places like Central State. Unfortunately, once they were out on their own, most of them just quit taking the medicine. Most of you have met schizophrenics. If you don't have one in your family, if you don't have one in your church or one you take care of, you've met them. They're the homeless people. The majority of people who are homeless are schizophrenic. You see them on the street. They sleep under park benches during the day. They sleep during the day because if they sleep at night, they're liable to get mugged. And it's safer to sleep in a city park while it's daylight than it is to sleep in the city park at night. You find them in the winter by heat grates, you know, where the steam comes up so they can stay warm. You see them pushing every worldly possession down the street in the grocery cart. They're the people who sit on the sidewalk with their cup and their little sign, shaking their cup, wanting you to give them money. So, you could say that they are no longer held captive by the system, but for the most part, they don't have anybody taking care of them anymore. They have no one to protect them. So, we have this population among us who see and hear things that no one else does. I've often said it's like everybody in the room is at the movie house, but only they can see it. You know, we're all sitting in the movie house, but the only people who can see the movie are the schizophrenics. That's what it's like, I think, when they're delusional and hallucinating. They believe these visions and voices and are compelled to do and live in ways that cause them and those that love them great grief. And the question is how do we help them? What in the world can we in biblical counseling do for them? Well, I think we can help them if we're willing to answer three questions. First is, what is schizophrenia? Two is, who